I want to play this clip for you because it may be the most shocking 8 minutes of audio that you're going to hear of testimony ever given in the U.S. Senate. The woman's name is Nicole Sirotek. She is one of the founders of America's Frontline Nurses. So she was the last one to give, I guess what you would call a testimony yesterday. Senator Ron Johnson knew she was there, and she had raised her hands a couple times because he kept saying, "We're running out of time, we're running out of time." And I guess he had told her that, "No, no, you're going to get to testify." So she was the closer on this. This audio is 8 minutes long, but it's worth hearing. So I'm going to play all 8 minutes of it. I might jump in at a time or two, but you can also find this on my Substack if you follow my Substack at thekingdude.substack.com. I have linked the video. Next hour, we'll play the video. This hour is going to do the audio. if I thought I could cut this up into pieces and that it wasn't important, then I would cut it up into pieces and I'd only play a minute or two at a time, or maybe just a highlight reel. But pretty much everything she says is a highlight reel. And the fact that it was said, now this goes into, people were asking yesterday, what good is this stupid hearing going to do, TKD? This goes into the congressional record. So anything that can happen after the fact, as it comes to, as it applies to any trials or prosecutions or accusations, or should a miracle happen, Nuremberg 2, et cetera, et cetera. This is now part of the historical records, in the congressional record. Now, that may not be a lot, but that's a start. If nothing else, it's a start, and it's on the record, meaning it could go down into the history books, as they say. So I'm going to play this audio. Again, you could share this with anyone. I posted it publicly. We recorded it, and it's a free audio file on the Substack. I'll have it up on we'll put it up on the Crusade Channel News as well, so on the blog at Crusade Channel. So this will be all over the place. So I encourage you to share it with far and wide. Now, many people aren't going to believe. They're going to go, come on, you don't really believe that woman's crazy. She's obviously deranged. It doesn't happen in hospitals. She was surrounded by a dozen or so nurses, other nurses, who were, as she's talking, you could see them sitting there, and you could see them nodding their heads up and down and acknowledging what it was that she was the content of what she was saying.
Thank you, Senator, for giving me an uninterrupted opportunity to represent the harm that is coming to the patients in the American hospitals and the lack of early intervention. My name is Nicole Sirotek. I'm a registered nurse. I've been a registered nurse for over a decade. My specialty is critical care, trauma, and flight. Since the start of the COVID pandemic, I've actually been rebranded, I guess you can say, as a leading expert in early intervention strategies executed on a large mass scale using the FLCCC protocol, as well as COVID patient ventilator protective strategies to optimize COVID patients on the ventilators. My story actually begins back in May of 2020. I was one of the original nurses that went to NYC to help with the COVID pandemic because, as we remembered, they needed nurses. Most importantly, they needed ventilators. Well, I was the whole package, a flight nurse that can manage ventilators. And when I arrived there, the gross negligence and the medical, malfeasance that happened in there and the complete medical mismanagement of these patients is what has led us to the situation that we're in right now. The pandemic and the hysteria that was created from poor public health measures and poor execution of appropriate early intervention strategies and the handicapping of medical professionals doing their job has led to where we are right now and into the crisis situation that that we are in. I will use several key case studies that will represent larger descriptive statistical information for what I'm going to speak of. But when I was in New York, and what continues to happen today, is that many of them are not dying from COVID. Now, many people don't know about me is that I'm actually a master's prepared biochemist, and I have worked extensively with the HIV virus tracking genetic mutations. So I feel very comfortable going toe-to-toe with some of these doctors here, although I am not a doctor. I'm just a nurse. But what we saw in these front lines, we knew what was happening. And when we asked for the ibuprofen, they said, no, it was contraindicated. When we asked, like, why aren't we giving them steroids? Oh, well, it's not. We're just following orders. Following orders has led to the sheer number of deaths that has occurred in these hospitals. I didn't see a single patient die of COVID. I've seen a substantial number of patients die of negligence and medical malfeasance.
Boom.
When I was on the front lines of New York, I'm unfortunately known globally viral as the nurse that was in the break room sobbing, saying that they were murdering my patients. The pharmaceutical companies had gone into those hospitals and decided to practice, I guess you can say, on the minorities, on the disadvantaged, on the marginalized populations that we know that we had no advocates for. Because the very agencies that should have been protecting them were closed because we were sheltering in place. Now, while I was there and I saw that the pharmaceutical companies were rolling out remdesivir onto the patients, I tried to get a hold of the IRBs. I tried to get a hold of my appropriate chain of command. I tried CMS. I tried Department of Health. And they rolled out remdesivir onto a substantial number of patients for which we all saw it was killing the patients. And now it's the FDA-approved drug that is continuing to kill patients in the United States. As nurses, we've collected a statistical or descriptive amount of information that you may not get from the doctors, because for more they do quantitative data, we do qualitative data with a humanistic, phenomenological approach in nursing research. And so we've collected the data from all of these patients across the country from which we have been helping patients, because I formed the organization American Frontline Nurses and the Advocacy Network so nurses could advocate for these patients. And all of this data pool shows that as these patients get remdesivir, they have a less than 25% chance of survival if they get more than two doses. Now they're rolling it out on children as well and into the nursing homes or skilled nursing facilities as early intervention, when, as Dr. Pierre Corey and Dr. Merrick have already demonstrated, that there are cost-effective medications out there, and we are going to see the amplification of death across our country. And we haven't even touched on the vaccines, for which all of our expert panels have already very well described that situation, so I won't touch on that, since many of them are by far superior to me than even I could ever hope to be. But I can tell you that 2 days ago, I flew out my first 10-year-old with a heart attack, and I had to fight the doctor in the ER because he's like, 10-year-olds don't have heart attacks. And I argued back and forth for 30 minutes to force his hand to get an EKG to find out that he had almost a complete STEMI, which is ST elevated myocardial infarction, for which you could see it lit up on the 12-lead EKG. And he's like, well, that's not possible. And I'm like, well, he was just vaccinated yesterday. It is very much possible. At any given time, people are getting a hold of me and the nurse advocates at American Frontline Nurses to help advocate, because as you've seen, there is victim shaming that it's anxiety, oh, it's this. But in actuality, if they put down that it was a vaccine injury, the physician, the corporation, the hospital, the clinic, they actually won't get reimbursed. So it gets labeled as anxiety or neuropathy or Guillain-Barré syndrome, when in actuality, it's very realistically a vaccine injury. Now, I'm not, even though I founded American Frontline Nurses, I've traveled extensively to South America, India, and South Africa, working in hot zones, stopping the spread of the virus, and working with early intervention. And nowhere in those countries, in developing nations, do I see these issues that we see here in the United States. It's actually, I'm a very proud American citizen. I come from a family of immigrants, and my mother told me that the United States is the best country in the world, though granted I am biased being an American. And our level of healthcare has been deteriorated to substandard third world nation healthcare. Whereas I tell people you are better off in South America in a field hospital than you are in level one trauma designer hospitals in the United States. As nurses, we are getting reports across the country from our American frontline nurses about patients not getting food, patients not getting water. How come a patient hasn't been fed in 9 days? Why do I need to get a court order to force a hospital to feed a person who isn't intubated and who's literally telling you they would like food? Oh, well, you can't take your BiPAP mask off. Well, that's what us nurses are for. We're going to help you take that off, and we're going to help you eat, but we're not allowed to. If you know, if they're on a ventilator, they're not getting basic standards of care. I've had patients that haven't been bathed, haven't been fed, haven't been given water, haven't been turned. And if you ask me, this isn't a hospital. This is a concentration camp.
That's right.
Absolutely it is. Nowhere in the United States do we isolate people for hundreds of hours at a time with no human contact. It's not even allowed in the prisons. You are not allowed to isolate a prisoner for beyond a certain extensive amount of time because it is, again, it is horrible for their mental health and is considered inhumane. However, in these hospitals now, we're allowed to isolate patients from their families for days, and you have to say goodbye to them over an iPhone, as Jennifer Bridges has just demonstrated to us, or she has to shuttle people in to see. And personally, I was fired for sneaking a Hispanic family in to say the last rites to their family. And so thank you, Senator Johnson, for giving nurses the opportunity to come and represent our patients, because as you can see, we're not often thought of as leading professionals, though we are the missing link between the doctors and the patients. So thank you so much for this time.
All right, that testimony is freaking sick, twisted, disgusting, vile, damning. I run out of adjectives. How does this happen? This is a question. How is it possible that this could even... if they put this in a movie, in a dystopian future world movie, it would be fiction. People go like, well, glad our hospitals really don't operate like that. This is at the end of 5 hours of similar testimony, which we played a lot of it for you yesterday live. If you missed it, we have some of the more important ones that we'll play back for you during the course of the program here today. The question is, the people that are actually perpetrating this, what is wrong with them? You know, here in the state of Louisiana, for example, we actually have a law on the books. It is a first degree felony. It's not a misdemeanor, it's a felony. If you come upon the scene of an accident in this state, and no one has first responded, if you will. If you're caught leaving the scene of that accident without trying to assist in some way, without reporting it or trying to help the driver, that's a felony. That's how much here in this state human life is treasured and is prized. It's a felony to not assist in a traffic accident. Maybe it's that way in your state. But we have been hearing now for 2 years, and now you have testimony like this, and then you have the testimony of Dr. Merrick, which we played live yesterday, where he said he was actually told, you have had your privileges revoked. And he had to go to a lounge where he knew three of his patients were going to die, and they did. Yesterday in Senator Johnson's hearing, there are other doctors that were heard from. The numbers varied. One said 300,000. One said 500,000 people could have had their lives spared from ILI death, influenza-like illness, whether it was a coronadome, pneumonia, influenza A, B, whatever, could have had their lives spared if they would have had early intervention treatment with the Zelenko protocol, the McCullough protocol, a variety of protocols. All based primarily on you need vitamin D, you need the vitamins, you need vitamin D, vitamin C. The stuff we've been talking about for 2 years, you need elemental zinc. You need, if you can get it, azithromycin, the antibiotic. So for 2 years now, and this has escalated. Let me share with you an item from the Epoch Times. Along these lines here, Mike Churchill on the Crusade Channel, always on air, always online, crusadechannel.com. We are live. Today is Tuesday, 25 January, 2022. This is from the premium features at Epoch Times. Remember that 40% spike in mortality in Indiana? It was first spotted in Indiana, and then the percentages bore themselves out across the continent. With Nevada coming in number one at 65% increase, and Texas number two at 61% increase. This in mortality from, if you compare 2018, 2019 to 2020, 2021. And doctors and epidemiologists are scrambling to try and explain this. Well, Peter Zwab of Epoch Times was assigned, I guess, to go dig into the data and see what he could find out. Here's his report. Exclusive. Why are non-COVID deaths spiking among prime age Americans? Now, you got to dig down into the graphs for the 18 to 65-year-olds. This is where you find the spikes. If I gave you, okay, give me three reasons why you think the deaths are up 40% continent-wide. Your time starts now, Roger. Best of luck. What would you guess? Most of you go like, it's the vaccine. Well, it may be the vaccines, but it's not the vaccines directly yet. I was absolutely stunned when I got to Zwab's conclusion. It's a premium article, so if you don't subscribe to the Epoch Times at crusadechannel.com/epic, you wouldn't have it. Let me give you a screenshot, and I will reveal it to you for the few of you that decided to show up today and listen or enter the chat room. So here's the finding. Totally unexpected. The three incidences of death that have spiked by demonstrably noticeable numbers. Drug overdoses skyrocketed in 2020 with more than 20,000 more dying in the 18 to 64 age group than the year before. Now, why would that happen? Maybe because you took their lives away, told them that human contact was not necessary, deprived them of community, locked them basically inside their homes, killed their parents and grandparents, told them they were going to kill them if they went and saw them. I don't know. Maybe you depressed them. Maybe they didn't want the, maybe they didn't take the program of Pilates, kickboxing, and margaritas, the Pizzaki protocol. Well, Jan, how would you deal with COVID? How would you deal with all the things that you're going? Well, I tell you how then. You go to kickboxing, go find some friends, and go get a margarita. Well, I'd love to get a margarita if I could find the ingredients to make one. Drug overdoses, 20,000 more in that time frame than in the previous years. And if you look at the graph at the Epic Times, that number was going up, but not like that. Here's the one that shocks me. Alcohol-induced deaths. Deaths involving alcohol, not just alcohol poisoning, but also those due to alcoholic cirrhosis of the liver. People are drinking themselves to death. And other alcohol-induced causes have been on the rise in recent years, but the 2020 increase was particularly significant. Nearly 8,000 more died in 2020 than the year before. 2021 data is not yet available. I will wager that it's even worse. Now, here's the shocker of shockers.